Okay, please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Patrick B. from the New Day Home Group. Very good.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Hey, thank you.
You'll have to forgive me, I'm a little tired. I'm gonna bring a chair so I can sit my lazy butt down if I need be. Okay, let's get this party started. Everyone hear me in the back?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay, my name is Patrick and I am an alcoholic. I had some interesting thoughts about what I was going to talk about tonight, and I'm not really going to talk about drinking because I don't think any of you need me to stand up here and be like, drinking causes problems, right? So I'll give a quick recap of a couple, my pathway through drinking, but I really want to spend a lot of time talking tonight about sobriety and good and bad sobriety, right? Working the program, but also being a dry drunk, which I am guilty of. I had a great childhood. I didn't have any problems. There was no abuse. I grew up in San Diego. I had a pair of grandparents, four uncles, four aunts, 18 cousins, a mother, two sisters, all who lived within like 20 minutes of me. So every day during the week was somebody's birthday, somebody's anniversary, somebody's graduation, somebody's soccer game. Like, it's almost annoying. It's too much family. But it was a great childhood. I couldn't have asked for anything better. The only alcohol I drank as a kid was an occasional sip of beer when I'm asking like my uncle or my mom, like, what's that taste like? I'm like, oh, gross. Give me my Capri Sun back. Like, this the whole booze thing's not for me. Until I was 17 and about to go up to college, and I thought to myself, like, I can't go to college and not know what being drunk's like. That seems foolish. All right, that's mark one of poor thinking. So I was hanging with my family, and my sister and my mom were drinking wine, and I stuck off to the kitchen, and I drank most of the bottle and came back out and felt fine, and snuck back in and finished the bottle and came back and felt fine, and snuck back in and opened the second bottle. Pretty soon I didn't feel fine. And I said the dumbest thing, and my family will never let me live this down. I said, I feel like dancing. And they mocked me ruthlessly, but that probably should have been a warning sign because it felt good. I felt at peace. I felt whole. And not because I was running away from anything, but because that's how I react to alcohol. Go to college, and, you know, with an intrepid, scientifically inclined mind, I was like, I want to test this stuff out. So having consumed alcohol on like one hand's worth of occasions, I was like, let's see how much I can drink. Let's see how many shots I can do in an hour. Let's see how long it takes me to black out. Let's see if I can re-black out twice in the same night. And that's the path I took. And by 20, I knew I had a problem. I remember sitting in a church thinking, I am in trouble. I'm not gonna focus on the highlights and the fun memories and the chaos of those years, but as I was approaching graduation, I was barely hanging on to my studies. I had started to fail classes. My grades had started to tank. I had started to lose some of the financial aid that I had, but the finish line was like right there, graduation. But I didn't know what I was gonna do. And I knew I had a problem, a really bad problem. So I decided to do the responsible thing and solve my problem. Not by quitting drinking, mind you, but by joining an organization that would teach me how to be a man, that would make me grow up. So I joined the Marine Corps. Yeah. Funny thing about that particular organization, it was founded in a bar. So I showed up thinking I had a drinking problem, and all my compatriots were like, hold my beer, I'm going to show you what drinking is. And it got worse and worse from there. Again, not gonna talk about escapades and fun memories and times in foreign countries, at least not until the sober part of the conversation. But the self-isolation, the ignoring your friends and family, the destruction to my health all continued until I had reached a breaking point. And I started going to AA, not because I thought it would work, because I wanted to try something that I didn't believe my father had tried. because he died an alcoholic death at 53, right? Not too long after I joined the Marine Corps. So I went, you know what? I know I'm not going to make it. I know this alcohol thing has got me beat, but I'm always going to go so I can say that I tried. It's a pride thing. Pride's going to factor into a lot of what I talk about. So I went, and they gave me a glimmer of hope, and then I relapsed. And then I went up and picked up another chip, and then I relapsed again, and I picked up another chip, and I relapsed again. And I went to AA for 10 months until it clicked. And those 10 months were the worst part of my life. It was worse than the drinking. Because at least in the drinking, there is a acceptance of, some said I couldn't swear. There's an acceptance of the path that I'm on and the fact that I'm not going to be on this earth very long. But every time I came in and was in a meeting and talking to folks like you, and they told me that there was a chance, there was a way out, and I would start to believe them, you assholes. I would start to believe you all and pick up another white chip, and it's a little burst of hope, and then I'd fall flat in my face, and I'm like, this is worse. I should have just kept drinking. And I don't really know what snapped, what changed. Pause, fast forward, I was on a road trip in sobriety with my mother, and she made the comment, like, I'm so proud of you, which is cool. I like hearing that. I'm the best person ever. Glad someone recognizes it. But she said, that took so much courage to stop drinking. That was so brave. I just started laughing. I'm like, what are you smoking? There was no bravery or courage involved. I was beaten into a sense of reasonableness. I was holding on to life with one hand and to booze with the other, and I was losing my grip on both. And it just so happened that I lost my grip on alcohol first. And August 17, 2020, I walked into New Day, 9:30 meeting. It was a Monday, a bunch of old dudes sitting around in a bunch of dirty couches, and I was like, I just like that, I'm pain, I don't know what to do, and I keep drinking. And one dude just went, stop talking. And just try listening. So I stopped talking, and I'm like, okay. Sitting there, and I don't remember anything that happened in that meeting, but one of the dudes went, Patrick, eye contact, I will see you here tomorrow, same time. And so I did. I showed up, and I showed up again the next day and the next night. And I started getting sober. There was a gentleman at that group. I will not name him, but he's still sober today, and he's a big part of my sobriety. This was during COVID. It was 2020, and so we could hardly get people in a meeting, let alone chairing a meeting. So this dude was there at 9:30 p.m. every night of the week, and he was getting kind of frustrated. So we went, sweet, a newcomer. What's our policy? 3 months co-chair? Cool. 3 months, you're going to be co-chairing. And I went, no, I'm not. But I kept coming, and then at the three-month marker, I walked in the door, and he went, my guy, right here next to me. And so I started co-chairing. And that helped me because I didn't have a sponsor, and I was working the steps according to the Gospel of Patrick. According to the Gospel of Patrick, everything I do is correct and I'm flawless, so it's not a very good book. But he had the same conversation with me that night when I started co-chairing. He went, our policy is 6 months sobriety, you can chair by yourself. And I went, I'm not going to do that. And he went, okay. And I forgot about the conversation. I walked into the six-month marker. And he went, my guy, and handed me a key, and like, there's the chair, and he left. So he gave me a meeting. He forced me. He literally hot potatoed responsibilities into my lap because, again, didn't have a sponsor. Wasn't doing the steps, at least not how they're supposed to be done. I was doing the steps according to Patrick. But having a little bit of responsibility kept me sober while I was not doing the program. Coffee break, bear with me. During that first year of sobriety, I made a deal with myself. I said, you know what? I'm not sold in the sponsorship business. If I stay sober a year by myself, then I'll get a sponsor. Because it's important to me. Pride, right? It's important to me. No, I just didn't want one. And so I made it a year, and I went, woo, I did a year, got my medallion, this is awesome. Guess what, guys? I did a year without a sponsor. I don't need one. And so I didn't get a sponsor, even though that was the deal I had with myself. And like a month later, I took a meeting into the recovery center at Portsmouth Naval Hospital. And I was there with one other person, we gave a meeting, it was great, and this young sailor, young guy, like 18, 19 years old, similar troubles as mine. You walked up to me after the meeting and you went, "Hey man, I really like what you had to say. I think this AA thing might be for me. Would you be my sponsor?" And I went, "No! Because I don't know how to do that because I've never had one. And God forbid I try something in life that I'm not going to nail perfectly, because then I don't want to have anything to do with it because I need to be perfect. Patrick needs to be perfect." So I told him no. I was just, I don't know, something's echoing through my mind as I'm recalling this. It's, I don't want anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. I said that for a year's worth of meetings. And here was a dude who was like, "I need help. Would you help me?" And I said no. And so what did I do? I went out and got a sponsor. But not for the right reasons, right? Because I still wasn't doing the steps. I was still full of ego and pride. I got a sponsor not because I had the realization of, damn, I could help somebody. I should help somebody. No, I got a sponsor because I was uncomfortable because I just said no to somebody. And only assholes do that. And I don't want to be an asshole. I want to be a good person. Patrick needs to be the best at everything. So I got a sponsor so that that situation would never happen, not because I actually wanted to help somebody. And so we went through most of the steps, and he was in the Navy, and I was in the Marine Corps, and I had a deployment coming up, and he was changing duty stations across the country. And I went, "Hey, my guy, how are we going to do this long distance?" And he went, "Here's the funny thing, we're not, find a new one." Which, and I ran into him years later, and he came up to me, and he's like, "Hey, man, I just want to say I'm sorry. I wasn't a very good sponsor." And I went, don't say that. I was a really bad sponsee. Like, you gave me all that I was willing to hear at that time. So I went on deployment. I'm sober. It's great. Big thing on deployment. You're on a ship. Hits port. Everyone goes out and gets drunk. I was really worried about this. So I go to my gunny, my gunnery sergeant, who works with me. E7, the Navy chief equivalent. Or E7, the Marine Corps equivalent of a chief, because we had a small team spread across each of the ships. And he had this awesome thing going, because he's a great dude, good family man. His wife was doing the whole, "I'm going to get fit while you're gone, so when you come back, I'll be all sexy. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to diet." And he, being good husband, is like, "I'm going to do the same thing. I'm not going to drink if you're not drinking." And I heard this, and I went, you are my liberty buddy. I'm going to spend every second with you when we're in port, because you're not going to drink. Funny detail about this gentleman, he likes to collect things. So what I didn't know is he had also discussed with his wife about buying liquor from every country we visited to like collect it. So I spent the entirety of deployment marching through city after city every time we hit port. I spent more time in liquor stores on deployment than anything else. But he didn't drink and I didn't drink. And I didn't tell anyone I worked with that I was an alcoholic. There's some implications to the career, sure. But really, I didn't tell anyone because I was afraid. I didn't want them to judge me. I didn't want them to look at me different. I didn't want to look at me different. So I kept that stuff close. I didn't tell anyone. And so we're coming back across the pond, the Atlantic, right? And I'm sitting in the wardroom because I'm one of those nasty officer types, with my friend Patricia. And we're just shooting the shit, talking about life. We want to do it to get back. And I have this like moment where I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. I'm ripped the bailiff out. I'm gonna kind of tell someone." God forbid someone knows anything about me. So I say, "I'm really looking forward to hitting a meeting, going to a meeting when I get back." And my expectation was either a meeting. Well, what is that? And then I get to explain how I'm an alcoholic and I'm carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. Or maybe her to get it instantly and be like, "Oh, that's so cool, good for you. You're, wow, that takes a lot." She didn't say either of those things. She said, I can't use expletives, she went, "The frick is wrong with you?" She definitely didn't say frick. And she just glared at me and slapped me in the shoulder. And I went, what do you mean? I mean, I didn't know what to say. And so she just stared at me. She's like, "You effing asshole. Me, Steve, and Mike have been doing meetings by ourselves for the last 7 months. Where were you?" And I was like, "Ah, bah, bah." She's like, "You've been keeping this quiet? Why?" And I felt really bad about that. But pride is a problem. I felt bad about that, not because, oh man, I could have been helping these people with their sobriety. I could have been contributing to the fellowship. No, I felt bad because I went, oh, I could have had an easier deployment if I had opened up, right? Because I twist things. I like to make it about me. So I came back from deployment, and I got, I didn't get a sponsor. Because again, that's my problem. I think I can do this on my own. Been sober a bit. Why would I change what seems to be working, even though I'm miserably unhappy? Fast forward a little bit. I'm gonna segue. Rewinding a little bit, right? Another thing that I was told in early sobriety is don't make any important life decisions in your first year because you are a crazy person and they're not gonna turn out well. And I went, rules are for other people. The second part of that statement, not the rules are for other people, but the don't make decisions is like, maybe don't get in any significant romantic entanglements in your first year because you are a crazy person. Again, rules are for other people. So at 10 months sober, and this is before deployment, I met a gal, she was lovely, we started dating, we dated for the next 2.5 years, and we seriously considered getting married. And that relationship worked out really, no it didn't, it burned to the ground. We ended up breaking up, and it ripped my heart out. And after a lot of reflection, after a lot of thinking, after a lot of wondering, I came to the realization that, okay, yeah, we may have not been perfect for each other. Got it. But there's a lot of issues in that relationship that we didn't address, a lot of arguments, a lot of room for improvement, areas that we could have grown together that I just avoided like the plague, right? I avoided talking about things, I avoided addressing issues, I avoided getting better. Why? Because I was a 10-month sober person when I met her, and when I met her, I pulled myself out of AA, out of the fellowship, because why do I need you all anymore? I've got my therapeutic support person now. So I stopped going to meetings. I hit like one a month. I stopped chairing meetings. I stopped doing the steps like at all, except again, according to the Gospel of Patrick. So fast forward again, 2.5 years, the end of this relationship, and we broke up and I'm like, what do I do now? And I went, oh God, I don't know. Because I instantly reverted back to being a 10-month sober person because I had stopped growing in that 2.5 years. I mean, don't get me wrong, they were some of the best memories of my life, some of the best times of my life, because she was awesome. I don't regret her or the relationship. What I regret is that I stopped pursuing sobriety. I stopped working on my spiritual development. I was a stunted growth, 10-month dry drunk, crotchety angry person. Right? And that does not make, or that does not a good partner make. So, again, going back to the current timeline of the story, you might need to take notes. It gets confusing. Came back from deployment. We ended up breaking up. And I was back to being 10 months crazy sober, crazy dry drunk. And then I got some fun news. I got some fun news from the medical establishment as I was trying to get out of the Marine Corps. I had some chest pain going on, and I, you know, going to see the doctors. And I'm like, I think something's wrong, and they went, no, you're fine and healthy. Turns out my heart wasn't doing super good, so I was staring down the barrel of some very serious medical issues. I had just broken up, right, with my significant other of almost 3 years. And that would have been a good time to re-enter the fellowship. That would have been a good time to turn back to AA. Again, I was still going occasionally to meetings. In my mind, I was still good. That would have been a good time to turn back and to rejoin you all on the road to spiritual development. But I did not. Instead, I threw myself out in the dating game because I'm single now. Let's go. And that didn't turn out super good. A series of flings, a series of short relationships that were not necessarily super destructive, but certainly weren't healthy. And here I am wondering why my life is spiraling, why nothing makes sense, why everything is going out of control. It's like, my dude, because you're an alcoholic. So a little over a year ago, I had open heart surgery, like full zipper down my chest. It's a fun scar. And for maybe the first time in my sober life, I started doing things in a not completely ass-backwards way. And what I mean by that is I had my surgery out in San Diego. My family's all in San Diego. I've had very limited time with them over my 8 years in the Marine Corps because I've been stationed overseas, deployments, yada, yada. So the week before my surgery, I flew out there. And without intending to do so, I started meaningfully trying to make amends to my family. Not to get in spiritual fitness before surgery, which would have been a really smart idea, but just because I was like, I'm here, I might as well. And that was maybe one of the first times in my sobriety that I actually started pursuing good things for their own sake, and not for a me, 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 me. What was the magical outcome of that? Magical outcome of that is I walked into surgery, open heart surgery, ripped my chest open, cut into my heart, rewired crap, right? And that was the most spiritual fit I had ever been. And I did really, really well. Pause and rewind in the lead up to surgery. I was talking to the doc. So I'm like, I'm really worried. And he goes, yeah, understandable. And I went, yeah, but like after surgery, there's gonna be a lot of pain and drugs. And I was kind of trying to get to the whole like me and things that make me feel good don't mix. He was like, yeah, don't worry, we'll give you lots of narcotics. And I was like, yeah. I know, that's kind of my concern. And I was like, see, doctor, like me and alcohol go way back and we are not friends. And he went, I hear you. I don't care. While you were in the hospital, we are going to give you stuff. You cannot say no because we're going to cut your sternum open. Like it's not a debate here. And I was really worried, and I prayed a lot about it, and I asked my family for support. And boy, I'm glad that I spent that week before surgery actually making meaningful amends and trying to repair some of the relationships that I burned down, because fentanyl feels great. Like, wow, first time I ever took that. Like, drugs aren't a part of my story, but lying in the hospital day after surgery, and the nurse comes in, and I was like, oh, I can't breathe, I'm in pain. And she was like, do you want some fentanyl? I'm like, send it. Hits it, I'm like, whew, can I get two? And she's like, you're cut off. So came out of the hospital and I started a long road to recovery. I know a lot of people now who've had open heart surgery, more than I ever thought I would, just because you say like, I've had open heart surgery, and someone in the corner is like, me too. So I've talked to a lot of them and I've asked a lot of them their experiences with pain, recovery, getting support, yada, yada, yada. I've worked really hard to regain my fitness and my health. I have not fully gotten there. What I can say though is that asking them what they did and asking them about their symptoms, I've done more than everyone I know combined from a therapeutic recovery standpoint. Like I've worked my ass off to get to where I am today. I'm not saying that to brag, I'm saying that because it was a tough flipping time. Like I still can't breathe right. And that's fine, you had a pity party, but like it was a difficult time. I was recovering from surgery and I was still trying to get out of the military. I didn't know where my life was going. But I did that little like jump back into amends and family, ran into surgery, discharged from the hospital, gave me a bunch of drugs, and I rapidly weaned myself off. Because again, it's a concern of mine. I don't do well with substances that make me feel good. Weaned myself off way too quickly, had to go back on. Weaned myself off again, that was still too quick, had to go back on. But eventually, cut the drugs out completely, like in a fairly rapid fashion. And I was sober, and I was good. And I came back to Virginia Beach, and I walked into a meeting like a day or two after I got back, downtown young and sober, and I met some folks there. I met one in particular who I ran into while I was jogging at the oceanfront, trying to like rebuild my health. And this person's like, you, I heard your share. You had surgery. I too have medical things. Let's be running buddies. So I gained a new friend. And I started running with them a couple times a week for months. And this person's also in the fellowship, and we talked about things. And eventually, again, that fear of opening up to somebody about talking, I was like, because they're talking about their sponsorship and how they're doing great with their sponsees, and they're doing all these cool things. And I went, yeah, I don't have a sponsor. And they went, what? How long have you been sober? I'm like, yeah, I know. And they went, okay, when are you going to get one? And I went, it's on my to-do list. And it stayed on my to-do list. And we ran many, many times. And for like two or three more months, this person kept asking me, they're like, yeah, so how's that sponsor thing going? And I went, it's not. And eventually they made the statement, they're like, how flipping long is your to-do list? And that kind of snapped things into perspective, and I went, I guess it's, I could reshuffle the order. So I got a sponsor, and this time the reason I got a sponsor is I wanted to be capable of being a good sponsor so that I could help other people. And if you hear the difference between when I got a first sponsor, it's because I didn't want that awkward situation of telling somebody no, because that makes me feel bad about myself. This time around, it was like, I could actually help somebody else, and I want to be better at doing that. So I got a sponsor, and we've worked together since August, so going on a year, and it's been going great, and he's an asshole, and it's a good thing. I need that. Somebody else that I met when I came back from surgery and became friends with was a young lady in the fellowship. And one thing that I had heard on and off, actually, the cyclic rate, everyone always says this, like, don't date people in AA, because it's bad. There is some logic in that. I'm not going to make a statement whether that is good, bad, indifferent, cool. I see the reasoning. This young lady and I became friends, and we had a mutual friend group, and we started talking, growing closer and closer together, and supporting one another. And the difference between this young lady and the gal I was dating for a couple of years is the gal I was dating for a couple of years, I was like, this is great, I like you, my life is great when you're in it. Like, that's the reason that I was in that relationship. This friendship with the new gal, I remember being really worried about it, because we were friends and we were starting to drift in a more friendlier direction. And I remember praying, and I was like, I'm going to say, God, you can have your higher power, you can call your higher power whatever you want. I call him God, and I say, God, however this goes, help me to be a good steward of her heart and her sobriety, because this is a friend of mine. And it was probably the first time that I had approached a relationship in a not completely self-centered way. And we did start dating, and we've been together like 8 months, and it's the best relationship from a sobriety and self-development standpoint that I've had. And I'm really trying not to... Again, the black profanity. It's cutting my speech short by like half an hour. I'm trying not to mess that up. Now, going back to the topic of pride, I'll coffee intermission. I was at a meeting... It was this week, a couple days ago, where the chairperson was talking about pride. And I thought about that, and I shared, and my thoughts on the matter is, I still have an issue with pride, and one of the issues I have with pride is it turns the good things that I do against me. I could see a little old lady, like, struggling with her groceries, and I could run over there and help her cross the street, and if I do it from a direction of Patrick thinks this is a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing. She's old, she's frail, she's got a grocery, she's struggling. Like, it's good to help her cross the street. But if I approach it from a Patrick, according to Patrick's diagnostic of what is good and what is not, right? Right? It's a good thing. But if I approach it from that metric, then I will inevitably, the second that I help her cross the street, I'll go, see ya, Mrs. So-and-so, cool. I am so cool, I'm the best. All of you people who did not help her cross the street, you all suck. Right? That is my automatic response when I do something good, because it fits my definition of good. I've picked up chairing meetings back in New Day, and they have two chairs up front. One's a normal chair like this, the other's just big leather, like armchair kind of thing. Looks like a throne. Take a guess which one I sit in. Right? Why? Because I am the king of the castle. And my pride, right, chairing meetings is good, sharing my story is good, helping other alcoholics is good, but if I do it from a standpoint of Patrick is going to go help people, because Patrick wants to, and Patrick thinks it's fun, then inevitably I will be sitting up there in that chair and I will be judging people. It's my kingdom, I am the chairperson, I am important. And you all probably know that's ass backwards. That's opposite of reality. The reality is the chairperson, the speaker, is there to try and help or give something, put something forth that someone else can use. So, on this conversation of pride the last week, of how do I solve that, how does that work, I was at a meeting last night, and met up with my sponsor and this other alcoholic who I had just met, and I was sharing some of this, and he immediately jumped in and was like, yeah, so how do you fix that? How do you fix your issue with pride when pride will poison even the medicine of recovery? And I went, instinctually, I didn't even really think about it. I went, oh, no, God. Yeah, that's how you fix it. Right? My higher power. And I kind of connected the dots in the moment. I went, yeah. Because if I look at a situation and I feel compelled to act where I know there is a morally good or bad decision to be made, I can always take a breath and go to my higher power. Help me act. Help me figure this out. Right? What would you like me to do? Not a, what does Patrick think is the right freaking move? And it might end up being the same answer, which is like, help the old lady across the street, right? It might be the same answer. But if I change the origin of where I'm making that decision from a me-centric to a higher power-centric, then all that venomous issue with pride after the fact just filters out and goes away. And that's really something valuable that I've been trying to hold on. God, it's only 30 minutes. I got 20 to kill. I got some. So that's kind of what I have to say about pride. Speaking of pride, in early sobriety, something that helped me while I was not, you know, getting a sponsor, while I was not doing the steps, I met a couple individuals kind of around the same age. We're all in the same point of sobriety. I had a couple months, they had a couple months, and we teamed together like the three musketeers. Kate, Ryan, Patrick, the three amigos. And we started actually developing the friendship in the rooms, because we'd go to them together and we'd co-chair meetings, but we also took it out of the rooms. And we would go to a destruction room and throw plates against the wall and be like, I hate sobriety, or the big book, or John and his silly stories, right? And we go shoot arrows at an archer range, we go do bumper cars. We actually were like living the fellowship out in the world. And that really helped me in early sobriety. I'm going back to the first girlfriend comment, right? How that pulled me from the fellowship, how that pulled me from AA. I stopped hanging out with Kate and Ryan when I got a girlfriend in that first year. When I allowed life to, as soon as life started getting good and it pulled me from AA, I stopped engaging in that fellowship. And looking back at Kate and Ryan today, Kate is on it. She's been chairing the same meeting for 4 years now. Kate is good. Ryan went back out, and he's still drinking. And he was a good friend of mine, and I've had to listen to him talk about he went on deployment, same as I did. He did the same thing as I did, as in, like, didn't seek fellowship, sobriety, support on deployment. I made it back and didn't immediately implode. He did. He started drinking again. I've had multiple conversations with a friend of mine who matters to me, who is still drinking, and I've had to listen to him sitting, like, across the table like this as he's telling me that he put a gun in his mouth and it failed to fire. That was not a singular conversation. I've had this conversation with him on multiple occasions of a fail to fire, or someone came home. And I've taken him, nearly dragged him to a meeting, back to a white chip, right, back to the fellowship, only to watch him then go back out and drink. And I see in him what I knew to be in myself, which is a pride thing, an unwillingness to let go, an unwillingness to admit defeat. And it sucks, and I will try and support him if I can, in the ways that I can. But right now, if nothing changes, one of my friends is probably not going to be here in a year. And that sucks. It does. Because there are people who I've lost in this program because they died sober. And that's something that I can live with. That's something that puts some joy in my heart. Right? There was a dude that used to go to New Day Country who passed, I think a year ago. Great dude. Kate knows his stories by heart. He was there the night that I came in and I got sober. There was another dude who passed, again, died sober, named Sonny. And to circle back to pride, Sonny couldn't breathe too good. And Sonny talked kind of like this. And one night at a meeting, I was a couple months sober, Sonny got handed How It Works. I'm not sure if you've seen how many words are on that page. That is the longest reading. And it took 25 minutes for him to go through. And because I'm an asshole and everything's about me, I got so infuriated that Sonny couldn't make it through this that every meeting from then on out, I raced up to the front of the room and I snatched How It Works. Because God, I'm not going to let that happen again. And that way I can read all the page with all the words and Sonny can get the preamble or something. But it's funny, that little bit of snarkiness, that little bit of me being an asshole actually helped because that forced me to read How It Works every single meeting. And you would have thought that it would have like filtered through my brain, but no, it still took a couple years. But yeah, pride is a problem that I have. Another issue that I have with pride and sobriety and how it messes me up is working with sponsees and separating my compulsive need to be great and be awesome and their success or failure in sobriety. Because yes, it is up to me as a sponsor to do the best that I can, to give them the most help that I can. But ultimately, their decision to drink or not, like I don't control that. That's a them and their higher power. That's a them, how they pursue the steps. And I can't take it personally if one of my sponsees goes back out and drinks, or makes it halfway through the steps and goes, my life is great, I think I'm good. And I go, oh, man, I've been there, done that. You should continue. And I went, okay, I'll see you, Patrick. Right? And then again, pride is an issue there because I can take that personally and I can go resentful and go, screw them. I did a good job, or they should be sober. That's on them. That's on their relationship with their higher power. I can't control that. I can just learn from the experience and be willing to sponsor again. So I picked up a new sponsee this week. He's doing good. I'm really excited to work with him. I'm going to be meeting up with him tomorrow. And then I have my cousin who asked me to sponsor him, who is in active spiraling. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking about, some of the things in my brain. I don't really have too much else to say. It's only been 37 minutes. I don't know if you all want me to continue. You can take a conscious, keep going.
When you're ready.
Or cut it. Cool. Then I'm going to wrap it up with here with saying my life now, sober and working the steps, actually working the steps as they are written, how they are meant to be lived, my life is better than it ever has been. And I'm really grateful for that, and I'm grateful that I get the chance to give back to this fellowship. And I hope some of this made sense. If it didn't, don't invite me back. But thank you all for being here tonight, and I wish you luck on the road to recovery.
Hey, thanks again, Patrick. It was wonderful, wonderful. Since we ended a little bit early, go ahead and have Jake come up and talk about step 7.